In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
We are at a point where those in power no longer care whether or not you trust them. What they do care about is whether or not you obey them. And with that, the level of force needed to compel you to obey. But trust is of little concern. Oh, sure, it'd be nice if you trusted them because it means your compliance is a little more likely. Because if you don't do what they say, they will find harsher and harsher means until you finally kneel before them. The point of an elected representative government is trust. We elect people and give them legal authority over us, over our businesses, over our daily lives, over our freedoms. Trust should be both implicit and explicit, meaning that trust should be implied in that relationship. Trust doesn't need to be stated. Of course you can trust them. That's why you elected them. And explicit in that we should see evidence of it. They should demonstrate trustworthy behavior by not lying or violating that public trust. And that requires them to go above and beyond to demonstrate their trustworthiness and reinforce it at every possible opportunity. How are your governments doing with that? How are the people to whom you gave legal control over your life doing with that trust? As we discussed last week, your state and federal governments have been lying to you about COVID, using those lies as the basis for health mandates, lockdowns, restrictions of all sorts on your life, your freedoms, your businesses, your daily activities. Here's how you can tell when the government doesn't care whether or not you trust them anymore. There's no apology. No one held responsible. No attempt to make amends. Again, going back to last week when the CDC changed the COVID numbers and got caught, did they come out with a very public statement about how this was wrong? How doing so was falsely inflating the numbers, making things look worse than reality? That because of this willful falsification, they have to go back in and re-examine all the data to make sure it's true and trustworthy? That the person who did this will be fired immediately because there is no tolerance for misleading the public? That's the kind of approach that engenders trust. Because they would be visibly demonstrating that trust is important to them, that your faith in them matters, that your faith is warranted. And they will do everything they can to protect that sacred trust that you have put in them. To do anything less is a violation of their implicit and explicit vows they have made to you, the public. Instead, we have lies built on lies, and the damage is mistrust spreads. It spreads to other issues because if you can't trust them on COVID, why would you trust them on what they say about spending? If you can't trust them on spending, why would you trust them on what they say about taxes or PERS or any number of problems they promise to solve? When it is allowed to grow, mistrust is an infection that will poison all other aspects of governance. The only way that situation truly changes is to change who is governing, especially when those previously elected have made lying their policy. We are trapped right now in an abusive relationship with Democrats as the abusive spouse. It's time for a divorce. I would like to welcome Mark Thielman back to the show. He is the superintendent of the Alsea School District, which is southwest of Corvallis. He's also a Republican candidate for governor. Mark, it's great to talk to you again.
Well, thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. You know, as I was sketching out this show, I was originally going to start with the issue that prompted us to have you back on, the latest betrayal by the Democrats and Speaker of the House, Tina Kotek, reneging on her word to give Republicans an equal seat at the table to redraw congressional maps in exchange for Republicans stopping their slow walking of bills, because you certainly have your own experiences with lying and lying politicians. And should you get elected, you'll certainly have to put up with people like that in the legislature. But I'd like to flip things a little bit because I understand you have some recent experiences with officials lying to you. Talk to us about that.
Well, it's a variety of them. There, you know, which ones to choose from. So a couple of things. As you know, last time we talked, I was the 504 person who notified her parents of the options under the governor's mask mandate. And just to kind of segue with that, and of course, that there was a lot of government wrangling about that. And And since we last talked, they were forced to come out and notify all superintendents that in that Alsea School District's superintendent was indeed correct, and that 504s did have to, the process has to be, you know, facilitated, and that, that they do have to be granted if the student or parent request is a qualifying criteria. And it's an example of rules for thee, but not for me. And that's a, it's a nice example of what you're talking about in terms of do as I say and not as I do. And so the thing for me is, you know, how do they get me back for winning the 504 battle? Well, they did it by sending OSHA down for a surprise inspection with no notice. And when OSHA came in, I said, well, are you here because of a complaint or a referral? And they said, well, we were referred. I said, great. Well, you're required to tell me who. And guess who it was? Colt Gill, Deputy Superintendent of Public Instruction from the Department of Education.
So what was the basis for that then?
The basis was that he decided to send them, that the referring document was a copy of the letter I sent out to parents, that it was the email I sent saying, these are your rights under the mandate. And these are your options. And so apparently that created a work hazard. And it literally said that on the letter, work hazard, this letter to parents, warranting a very hostile inspection from the OSHA folks. And, I mean, they, you know, it was a humdinger. My favorite was they barged in and not very kind. And then they were, we are required to show you our badges. It's kind of like when the FBI in the movies, you know, so I responded by saying, oh, wait a minute, let me show you my ID. And OSHA apparently isn't used to that because, you know, I've been down this road of the intimidation game. I know how my opponents, the Democrats, operate, and it's all about intimidation and force and coercion. And then when I didn't respond with that, the real issue came up, which is what they really seem to be interested in, is they wanted to know what kind of mitigation things we were doing because we were not having the student spread of COVID like other schools were having. And so they took 14 pages of notes as I went around with them. And I said, well, here, I said, if that's what you want, you should have just called and asked. So, I, you know, to me, that's, again, using the government, weaponizing it based on political motivations and false pretenses. And so, you know, this is why I'm running for governor. It's also why I take the positions I do as the leader of this school district, because if I did what these people wanted, we'd be all closed by now.
Oh, absolutely. So here it is. You've got these people higher up on the food chain there, these department heads and the governor and so on. Why is it that those in charge seem to think nothing of lying or misleading or manipulating those further down the ladder?
Because they're in charge, and that's exactly what they tell me. Because I've asked that question multiple times. You know, they will say things like, well, we don't have to explain ourselves. This happened with the epidemiologist in the conversation about COVID guidance and policy. And basically, OHA is trying to change the rules up for schools again and saying that, you know, the only time you can be 3 feet apart from another student is in the classroom. Well, that's not the guidance they released to us. And so when OSHA came through and we did our tour, we had an elementary class eating at their desks because we don't have room in our cafeteria to keep everyone 6 feet apart. So we have them eat in their rooms and they eat at their desks, just like many elementary schools that don't have cafeterias all over Oregon. And that was one of the kind of rants I got was, well, you know, because apparently OSHA called the Bend County Health people, of course, and then they asked me to come to a meeting, and so I was on a Zoom meeting, and I kind of challenged them. I said, no, that isn't the guidance, and we're absolutely going to have them sit at their desks and eat so that they stay spaced and they can take their mask off to eat. And they were saying, well, no, you can't. It has to be 6 feet. Well, that doesn't make any sense because it's in a classroom, and the classroom rule is 3 feet. And, you know, I mean, it's obvious. I mean, what happens when you go to a restaurant? Right? You walk in, you sit down, you take your mask off. So, you know what I mean? You don't have to be 6 feet from everyone at the table or
no,
you get my point.
I guess COVID only, you know, if you're 5 foot or taller, it'll get you. But if you're sitting down at a table, then it won't. So let's go ahead and take a break there. It's all about Democrat lies today. We'll continue talking with Mark Thielman about his experiences. And coming up, we'll talk about Tina Kotek yanking the deal out from under Republicans on congressional redistricting.
We'll be right back.
Mark Thielman is our guest today. He is a Republican candidate for governor. He's also currently the superintendent of the Alsea School District, which is southwest of Corvallis, about halfway between Philomath and Waldport. And so during the break there, you were talking about how these thugs had shown up there from OSHA, well, acting thuggish, I should say, and they were really trying to intimidate your office staff. Talk to us about that.
Well, they came in. There was a hygienist and then a safety compliance officer, and they came in, basically demanding, and the secretary was like, no, Mr. Thielman's office is down the hall. I can, if you want, you can head down there. No, he has to come up here. And so they called me, and of course I could tell she was upset. And so I was like, no, they can come down to my office. That's a normal protocol thing to do. So just send them down. And well, they want you to come up here. I said, well, that's not going to happen. So they have two choices at this point. They can either come down to my office, like professionals, or, they can leave or be trespassed. And so that got really, and they came down to my office. And again, they were very put out and aggressive, and, the throwing the badges and the, wanting me to see their credentials. And I responded by saying, oh, well, I'll do that too. And then they responded with, well, we're required to show you our credentials. And I said, well, is that included when you vote? And they didn't appreciate that at all. So that broke the ice.
For people, the left says that they're anti-fascist, but they sure use a lot of fascist tactics, don't they?
Well, yeah. And that's what I want everyone to understand is that, we're supposed to be in this together. And government is supposed to be in service to the people. And it's supposed to create a relationship that's somewhat collegial, unless it needs to be adversarial. But that's not the way things have gone in the last, 10 years. It's becoming increasingly coercive and adversarial, and in which people seem to be in the role of subjects now,
yes,
rather than the employers of the government.
Yeah.
And so this is one of the reasons why I bring a different perspective. So in this school district, I took the risk on that 504 thing. One, because I knew the law better than I knew my overlords did. And two, I genuinely want to try to meet people where they're at, knowing that there's a whole bunch of different perspectives about masking, some who support it, some who don't. And I'm here to serve all of them. And that takes a special kind of leader, and it takes an open leader. Because, I had a naysayer come in the other day and said, well, if there was a small school in another town, and they wanted only vaccinated students in mass, and this was a group of parents. And so I said, well, is it a group of parents? And they would want me to come in and help sponsor a little school pod, because I'm getting lots of invitations to do that. And they said, yeah. And I said, would you wouldn't support it, would you? And I said, no, I would. If that was important to that group of parents and there was something we could do to support them with curriculum, we absolutely would sponsor them and give them access to funding and support. And you should see the look on those folks' faces. They were like, whoa, because I'm not here to judge. Now, just for the record, I haven't had that offer. But
but really what you're describing is how America should be. Which
yes.
is, if it's about freedom, then people need to have the freedom to do what they want, not the freedom to obey the government. That's really backwards thinking.
Well, and see, I represent the government when those requests come, because I'm a government employee. I represent a public school district. Imagine me saying, well, in that circumstance, under those criteria, it's not about what I think or what I agree with. It's about that group of parents and what they believe is important for their kids.
That's exactly right.
So this, and that's what I mean by being open. You have to be open, and you have to put your own scruples aside. And I think, the whole issue with Tina Kotek, I think you mentioned that. I know it's going to be a talking point coming up. She is a close-minded person. And therefore, she basically is in charge, and she will do what she wants. And that is one of the divisive things that affected the Republican Senate. About half the senators said, you can't trust her. She won't honor her word. And the others said, no, we're going to, she has to honor her word.
Yeah. If you understand the current crop of Democrats. And like you said, we'll get into that here in a little bit. But in that last segment, I had asked you about why is it that those in charge seem to think nothing of lying? But is there any punishment for those in charge that do lie to you or to the public? I mean, any genuine consequences for lying, and how hard is that process to hold them accountable?
Well, there isn't in this particular. When you're dealing with, and I want to make sure I'm very clear because I'm not trying to be partisan. I'm talking about a relationship that I've experienced working with the Tina Kotex, Peter Courtenays, and Governor Browns of the world. They don't interpret the same thing like most hardworking Oregonians do. And again, it's a closed-mindedness, and it's they don't assign value to the same terms like morality, integrity, consistency. For them, it's all about agenda and accomplishing and being seen as, you know, the progressive trailblazer or being seen as something. And most people just don't live their lives that way. We're too busy trying to raise kids, you know, get our jobs done, go back and forth to work, maybe catch a movie, you know, plan a camping trip. These folks don't do those things. And if they do, they make sure cameras are there so they can look like they're, you see what I'm saying? Everything's mm-hmm. external. And so I learned real quick, they're very shallow. It's kind of like, you know, down the Everglades in Florida, right? It's 60 miles wide and 1 inch deep river, right? It goes through the Everglades. That's how these folks are. And once you understand that, then they become a lot less ominous, and they actually become easy to oppose. It's actually quite simple.
In what way?
Well, their number one fear is exposure.
Hmm.
So they do not want to look bad. That's why Governor Brown called me out on the 504 thing in that letter. And see, she said, well, I didn't name you, Mark, and, you know, specifically, so how dare you out me in the way you did? And I said, yeah, but, you know, remember, I think I shared this, her staff called the media and said, this is the one she's referring to. And you see how this works? So they don't care about targeting me, as long as they didn't do it with my name in the actual letter with the governor's name on it. Well, what's the outcome's the same. And it's not honest. See what I'm saying?
Mm.
And we need a very different approach to government. So, for example, if I'm, let's say I was governor, well, when I'm governor, if I want to out somebody, I'm going to use their name. And the beauty of that is then it becomes clear for everybody. There's no brinksmanship. And if I'm not going to out somebody, I won't use their name. See what I'm saying? Somehow these folks do not possess that value.
Hmm.
And they don't assign meaning to it.
It certainly explains a little bit more their relationship with the media, because if they're genuinely fearful of exposure, if that's what they truly fear, then that would explain why they work so hard with the media to cover up what they do and to keep what they do out of the news. All right, let's go ahead and take a break there. Coming up, that Republican deal with Tina Kotek over congressional redistricting, who yanked that out from under them so she could give Portland control over at least 4 of Oregon's 6 districts. Stay with us. More with Mark Thielman, Republican candidate for governor. And welcome back. We're talking with Mark Thielman, Republican candidate for Oregon's governor. We've been talking about lies Democrats tell, and we're going to shift now to the whopper of a lie that got you on here, the lie by Tina Kotek, Speaker of the House and Democrat candidate for governor. So I want to recap real quick what happened for people who may be a little fuzzy on exactly what happened. This last session, Republicans were holding up legislation by forcing it to a snail's pace by demanding every bill be read in full on the floor prior to voting. This is a normal tool of legislatures that they can request this, and they were requesting it of every bill. Democrats, however, wanted to push through things, so they dangled the carrot of stop demanding the bills be read and we'll give you co-chair status on the redistricting committee. And those of us who know how elected Democrats are knew this was a massive setup to get Republicans to let go of the one bit of legislative trickery that they have, based on a promise that we all knew that the Democrats wouldn't keep, because the deal had no real provision for when push came to shove, who makes the final decision. So, this is, as I said, par for the course for dealing with Democrats, it seems, especially in the last 10, 20 years. They just can't be trusted. And now we're in a situation where the Republicans have been betrayed. There doesn't appear to be an immediate recourse. I suspect the reason that the Democrats broke the deal was they were getting overwhelming public opposition to their plans and public support for weakening Portland's influence in areas outside their geographic areas. Instead of what the Democrats wanted, which was to extend Portland's influence into at least 4 different districts. I mean, that's just patently absurd. Why do you think they broke this deal in such a blatantly in-your-face manner?
Oh, simple. It's called power. So Tina Kotek, notice the timing of her declaration to be running for governor. by the way, she's the one I'm most excited to face on the debate stage as we get to the final part of the campaign, where it's one Republican candidate versus a Democrat. I can't wait. So for her, she says, I'm now going to run for governor. We've got this redistricting coming, and as long as it's map A or C, Portland's going to dominate, and that's where her power base is. It's not rocket science. That's exactly what she's thinking. And she knows that she will then be, at least, you know, have a higher probability of having a supermajority legislature to rubber stamp all of her progressive initiatives, mm-hmm. so that she can be the one that, leads the charge on the left coast to take Oregon to the progressive utopia. That is exactly what they're discussing. And so, you know, she's excited about that. And so, yeah, she's got to take some heat for, going back on her word. But, hey, you know, it's another year plus here to the November election for governor, and it's just not going to be a real issue. So that's exactly what's going on. Well, I hope I wasn't too succinct.
I think she's betting on the fact that voters tend to have short memories, especially when it's our party versus their party. And mm-hmm. Democrats tend to vote for Democrats, regardless of how bad the Democrats are. They're mm-hmm. just going to fall in line and vote for. But, you know, looking at that, I don't see how anyone should or could trust a promise that she makes now if it becomes inconvenient for her to keep once elected.
Well, the thing is, she is counting on the fact that a lot of people are not as well informed as you are. And they actually believe that. It's actually a form of psychology, because they also have the ability to create emergencies and distractions.
Yes.
And because they can declare any emergency they want, and they have plans to continue to declare them. Let me give you an example. It's not just Tina Kotek. So look at Governor Brown. She gave these mandates for vaccinations for public schools, for the Department of Administrative Services, and for the medical community. And 10/18 was her deadline, until she found out that a lot of people that are in power in government and the Department of Administrative Services had a high number of people who were saying, hell no, we're not getting the vaccine. Now, ironically, she also had the legislature and their staff members exempted from any of those mandates, which is even more conniving.
Yeah.
So today in the news, she said, well, Department of Administrative Services requirements have been moved to November 30th to give people more time. You know what that's called? It's called losing.
Yeah.
And it's also called lying.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And this notion, again, of rules for thee, not for me, that just drives a lot of people insane.
Yeah. Well, yeah, she can't have the government shutting down, because the Department of Administrative Services is the Justice Department, the State Library, you know, a lot of the main offices, ODE, et cetera. And so the thing about it is she didn't come out and tell everybody, okay, this was less popular than I thought, and it's going to be too big of an impact. So what she does is she moves the deadline for the people that matter to her most, while holding everyone else accountable and causing people to lose their jobs. Well, so, for example, my daughter's special needs. They do not have enough staff to support her in the special needs program in Eugene School District 5 days a week. They have to put her on partial hybrid, because people have either quit or are going to lose their job because of the vaccination issue.
Hmm.
Thank you, Kate Brown, for underserving my child again.
Well, and it's not just the vaccine mandate itself, which I think is frankly illegal, because there is no currently available FDA-approved vaccine. They are forcing people to take an emergency use authorization vaccine. We covered this a couple of weeks ago with Scott McEwen, a recovering attorney, as he likes to put it. And he
you
thinks,
are correct.
He thinks it's very much a legal sleight of hand. They are doing these mandates under false pretenses. But getting back to the Kotek deal there, it's not just that Democrats betrayed Republicans. This was a Republican leadership failure, too, because they put themselves in a position where they were vulnerable. And there was no guarantee, should Democrats go back on their word. There were six Republican senators who refused to walk out, deny quorum, because they said they were staying behind to negotiate with Democrats to get more representation for redistricting. So I mean, the whole thing is absurd. But I mean, how do you get some spine into these Republicans should you get elected governor?
Well, there's an inside gang of leadership. So Fred Girard, and I experienced this when I was doing PERS reform this last round. And there is a mentality that says, you know, we're going to be in the minority. You know, we're going to have to learn to work with these people. So, and then you have Senator Tim Knope, who is in a district that's gone from red to purple to, you know, almost blue. And so redistricting is a big concern for Senator Knope, and you can't blame him because Ben's changed, obviously. A lot of progressives have moved out there over the years. And that's the only crack you need is because, well, if we can get there, then maybe I can maintain my leadership. And, you know, Senator Knope's been an effective senator. And so then what happens is you create this soft mutual interest. And then the Democrats also, if you recall, came in with money. Hey, we'll also open up these funds for yes, you and to take back to your districts. So what you get is, yeah, from the Republican, it's the mirror image. You know, hey, this will help me in my personal district for one of the senators. The other ones were like, well, you know, we want to maintain our dominance in the party because that group of characters had previously had undue sway, and that changed, as you know, with the leadership in the party. And so what you get is this deal from the mirror image saying, you know, yeah, Democrats are probably going to not honor their word, but we can just blame them when they do, and that actually might work for the party. And what I call it is it's called a double speak. Each side is doing narrative making, and what they're trying to do is shape the reality as it applies to the future in a way that they believe will work for them. But notice there's one outcome that isn't in either side's scenario, and that is what's best for the people.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm running.
Exactly right. Okay, let's go take a break there. We'll have more on the Kotek betrayal coming up with Mark Thielman, Republican candidate for governor.
Get a little more intelligence on big government.
And welcome back. We're talking with Mark Thielman, superintendent of the Alsea School District and candidate for governor on the Republican side. I found out more by heading to markfororegon.com. That's M-A-R-C, and that's F-O-R, markfororegon.com. We'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com as well. So, Mark, recently the Democrats once again proved to be contemptible liars when Tian Kotek, also a candidate for governor, as you said, reneged on a deal that gave Republicans co-chair status on the Congressional Redistricting Committee. But when she wouldn't get the results that she wanted, she pulled the deal and kicked them off. The new committee has two Democrats and one Republican. You know, it strikes me that if Democrats wanted to be trusted or had any sense of honor, you know, that used to be a big thing in politics, that your honor was, you know, that was the thing, had to show that you had honor. Those, the two D's on that committee should be the ones to walk out and tell Tina, you know, you had a deal and you need to honor that deal. But there they sit doing Kotek's bidding.
Well, it's because Kotek probably had something to do with picking them.
I am certain.
Again, you pick if I stood in a leadership role as a superintendent of a school district, and every hire I made was based on my belief that the candidate that I want picked will be the most conforming person, that all they will do is conform to whatever I want. That is the criteria that these folks use, not only to recruit candidates, but to select committee members. It has everything to do with their ability to be controlled.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's just, if the Democrats are willing to lie so blatantly to their own colleagues, people they know and work with and have some sort of personal relationship with, about having them be a part of the process to redraw these political maps, it's clear that you can't trust them, can't trust Democrats on any voting issue. I mean, so tell me again how we can trust you when it comes to voting.
Well, you can trust me when it comes to voting because there's consistency yes. between what I say and what I do. Now, with these folks, what they do is rather than have us talk about the hypocrisy of their changing, ever-changing positions, is they say, it's not lying, we're just speaking our truth. And they actually want you to believe that. And so nothing, there's no accountability in their world. There's never a limiting principle, which is why they're not arresting people who are burning Portland, which is why they tell the police to stand back as Antifa attacks, you know, women and children in a church gathering in a park. It's unconscionable.
Well, you are accountable if you're a Republican.
Well, but, you know, Republicans are accountable, but only because of the label that they work to assign to them. They're either white supremacists or they're bigoted or they're non-empathetic. And so they assign limiting values to the people that get in their way. And pretty soon everybody learns not to get in their way because how do you fight crazy? See, or the power of the government without accountability. Without accountability, though, you cannot have social justice. You can only have anarchy, which is where we're heading. And we will be the way of San Francisco if Tina Kotek becomes governor. We will have, we'll triple our homeless population. I guarantee it. And she will work hard to talk about how she's fighting to solve all these problems that never will be solved. She'll have a million programs and no genuine results.
No, but spend an awful lot of money trying to pretend that she's actually doing something. So let's say that you were part of that negotiation going into it, where the Republicans would get some kind of equal status with the Democrats on that committee. How would you have handled that differently?
Well, the first thing I would have said is, if they're wanting us to stop slow walking our votes, that means we have power. And then I would have gone back and said, we want a better guarantee or we're all walking. And they needed that gun bill. They needed those things so they could be the most progressive. And that's what Tina Kotek said in her announcement. You know, I've led and I've done all these things. And so, you see, this is contrived. So the thing is, you have to know where your leverage is. However, the Democrats came back and said, well, we're just not going to open up any of these funds. And the Republicans should have said, no, that's fine. We'll let everybody know you offered us money. But see, they weren't able to do that. And the reason is that conservatives in general have definitions of value. And so it's harder for Republicans to engage in those processes because their support base are people who want consistency of and no hypocrisy, and they want people to have morals and values. If you don't have that limitation on morals and values, it's easier to maneuver. And so, you know, it's ironic that some of the most experienced Republicans were the ones that entered into that bad deal with Tina Kotek. See, and it's because they've been around that lack of accountability longer, and no one gets out unscathed. And I'm not saying that they did something wrong. I truly believe, Senator Girard and others really, really thought they were getting value out of that. But you got to remember that you're entering into a deal with people that don't share that integrity value.
No.
And that's the toughest part. So then you end up looking like a fool. And now we're in a worse situation than we ever could have been in had they just walked and used their leverage and their power.
Yeah.
And now, if I'm fortunate enough to be the Republican nominee, and if I win the nomination, I'm going to become governor. And it has to do with the way I relate with people. And I can talk to people on all sides of the aisle. And I'm not talking about being bipartisan. I'm saying I'm going to have the bully pulpit of the governor's office. And it'll be much harder for Democrats to maneuver the way they've been maneuvering with their truth when you have an accountability, a check and balance, because the governor's office has a loud speaking voice. And I will start educating the people of Oregon about what's good and what's not good from this style of leadership.
Okay, let's go ahead and take a break there. Coming back, we'll have more with Mark Thielman. He is running for governor on the Republican side. It's Mark, M-A-R-C, 4, F-O-R, Oregon.com, Mark4Oregon.com. Stay with us. We'll have more on those Democrat lies. It's all about lies today, lies Democrats tell to get elected, lies Democrats use to spin multi-billion dollar policies and programs to enrich their allies and themselves, lies Democrats tell you to get you to do what they want you to do. To get to the truth, though, we are talking with Republican candidate for governor, Mark Thielman. You can find out more about him by going to markfororegon.com. That's M-A-R-C, and 4 is F-O-R, markfororegon.com. And Mark, last week we talked with Senator Dennis Linthicum that if publicly traded companies did to their financial statements what public officials have done with their COVID statements, those CEOs and CFOs would go to jail. But inflate COVID numbers or deaths or cases and overstate hospital numbers, somehow that's fine. And as I asked last week, why is it wrong for people to lie to the government, but perfectly okay when the government lies to its people?
Well, and that goes back to a whole series of Supreme Court precedents going back, prior to just before the U.S. Civil War. So we don't have to go into the details on that. But basically, the premise was that if the government lies for the right reason, to gain a outcome that benefits the public, and they can they would be able to establish that, then they can lie. And they use that to catch, like, cyber pedophiles, right? The policemen will pose as a victim child, and then they will lure the person and catch them. It's called lying. But lying can have a value to society if the government does it. And so what the Democrats have done is they have actually, and I don't know if that's the right term, they have manipulated or perverted that to the point where, and what happens is it's the same process, but what if you could lie in order in support of the interest of the government, as long as you can get people to believe that there's some benefit or outcome? Like, Antifa, we're fighting fascists, so anybody that opposes us is a fascist. Well, the evidence doesn't support that, right? But people believe it. And so, again, you go back to accountability. Why is it in the interest of Oregonians to elect Mark Thielman governor? Because I will bring accountability by my, just my, because of who I am and the way I do business. And so, like with the 504 thing, I did not expect to be on national news that fast, but I did expect to be on national news. And so the thing is, I had to make a calculation, and I said, hey, if I can put this out there, and what will my parents see? They'll see me listening and doing. Even though some parents agreed with me and some didn't agree with me, all of them had respect. All of them said, well, you can't fault the man, his scruples. He's trying to keep us open. And that's what I'm getting at. The Democrats, they're not looking for that kind of outcome. Respect is, for them, is something they can assign, and it's something that they're not interested in receiving from us because we're the less powerful. And that's what I want people to understand. It is a manipulative, it's a malleable set of moral values in which everything is contextual. And if they want to do something, they can lie about it because their decisions are always good for society. I mean, imagine that. What would happen if you raise kids believing that?
Oh, I know. It'd be horrifying. Yeah. But you raise some really interesting points, because essentially what you're saying is the ends justify the means. That's where we're at now. And that's really disturbing, because that's par for the course for government. As you said, they now lie to people. Except the odd thing is you're the one punished if you don't believe the lie or refuse to go along with it. I mean, that's where we're at in society today. Shouldn't it be worse for the government to lie? I mean, shouldn't punishments be severe for people whose job it is to tell the truth to the people they serve?
Well, there is a way to check that. Okay. And it's very simple, which is why we need Mark Thielman in the governor's chair. Because you check it by saying, by teaching people in Oregon, let's, for example, if somebody breaks in your house and you shoot them and kill them in self-defense, and it's determined that shooting was justified. We see it in all kinds of areas. But let's take that scenario, single mom, person breaks in, a person gets killed. The question I would always pose to my students is that still murder? And of course, kids go back and forth. But the reality is, anytime you kill somebody, it's bad. It's wrong. Which is why there's a process that the investigators go through to say, was this shooting justified? And in other words, a very bad thing can be justified and called good. And Democrats figured this out, and now they apply that lens to everything. But they just took out the investigation part. See what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's good because we say it is. It's good because we are in charge.
Well, except in today's society, with our current justice system, the government would have handed that person the gun and then arranged the meeting for the person to go there in the first place. I mean, that's where we've gotten with this.
Because, ready? We will investigate ourselves and declare it justified.
Yeah.
That's scary.
Absolutely insane. Okay. Let's go ahead and take a break a little early here. Coming back, we'll be talking with Mark Thielman, who's running for governor as a Republican. And we'll be talking some more about his solutions. Stay with us. And welcome back in our final segment now on the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today to Mark Thielman. He is running for governor as a Republican candidate.
You can find out more about him by heading to Mark for Oregon. That's M-A-R-C, and four is F-O-R, markfororegon.com, and we'll put that up on ispyradio.com as well. And so, Mark, in this final segment, I'd really like to talk to you about some of your solutions. And you had an interesting post on Facebook regarding the Kotek betrayal that Democrats, quote, wish Portland and other metro areas hold even greater power over rural areas and the voices of more rural living Oregonians. And I think that's true based on their actions. But how do we solve these issues where people in Portland believe they have a right to rule over people in areas where they themselves don't live? I mean, I thought the left was against colonialism.
Yeah, you know, and I didn't mean to give you a guffaw there, but well said. So two things. I've been all over the state, both in Portland and almost every single county, but I will eventually, in the next month or two, have hit every county. And I've met people in rural and urban areas all over the state. And everywhere I go, everyone is interesting. And that's a narrative that does not get communicated. In other words, I really enjoy the urban perspective in Portland or the suburban perspective in Portland or the Oregon City perspective or Canby, Wilsonville, and so on and so forth, Medford, you name it, even Baker City and LeGrand. Now, the thing that's interesting is when I go into the most rural areas, I mean, way out past Gold Beach and down by Coos Bay and over in Harney County or Lakeview or Klamath area, very remote areas of this unbelievably beautiful state. And what I am finding is something that I haven't seen when I did similar things 10 years ago, is I have never seen rural people more aware, more informed, and more engaged than I'm seeing now. Mm. And I think that that is a product of just what you defined, that the people in power have predominantly been coming from Portland. Portland's had an undue percentage of influence statewide in Oregon. And people are saying enough. We're Oregonians too. Tina Kotek does not believe that rural Oregonians have the same value. I guarantee it. And I hope she listens to this, because if she starts to talk and say, I'm going to do reach out to rural, it'll be because of your radio show, and you'll say, man, we're winning. And the thing that's so cool about it is what your viewers probably don't know is they passed a law that says you can vote 8 days after the election now, and the county clerks get to decide which of those late turned in votes get to be counted. Well, I got news for you. There'll be a lot of late votes in Portland when I'm declared the winner on the night of the election. And you see how this works. So my response to that was, great, man, on election night, we'll know how many more votes Republicans are going to need to get out there. Governor's chair.
Yeah. That's just an asinine law. I hate to say it. And no matter how you cut that. But yeah, that'd be great if suddenly all of the rural people that didn't vote said, I think I'll go vote because it's pretty close. The other thing that just floors me, you know, again, the whole show has been about lies, but even in their statements that are, you know, these press releases, it's just bold-faced lies. And this is from her press release talking about the redistricting committee when she pulled that together for the special legislative session. She says, in Oregon, we believe your vote is your voice and every voice matters. No, no, they don't. I mean, if they honestly believe that, they'd stop trying to take away the voice of people in rural areas by giving Portland rule over them. But have you ever flipped that on its head and asked people in these cities or in Portland, say, hey, do you think people in rural areas should decide your traffic flows, your traffic patterns? Should they get to decide how many bridges you have? Should they get to decide what your internet speed is?
Okay, so there's a simpler way to say that, and because she really believes that every voice matters. Okay, but what's the application of that? Portland voices matter more.
Yeah.
And that's really what you're frustrated by. And that's why, you know, your analogy is great. We wouldn't let you know, folks down in a rural ranch area decide how to set up the road grid in downtown Portland or make improvements to the MAX train. The thing about it is you have to go back to voting power and value. Tina Kotek knows that rural people are less engaged and they don't vote to the same percentages. And so she's following the same old mantra. And here's what I'm saying is, I hope your radio show reaches every single Oregonian. I hope everyone in Oregon listens to this, because they need to hear what I have to say. Every vote really does matter, and it actually matters equally. And I got news for everyone. This is not a blue state. It is a blue Portland and a blue Eugene, and there's little tiny blips of blue, but it's a vast sea of red people,
yes,
of red conservative Oregonians. And I have a feeling that there's going to be a record percentage of Republicans coming out to vote for me, because the things I'm going to say are exposing to the left, the far left. And I would argue patriotic Democrats, Democrat parents, even woke parents who want a more egalitarian world are going to be very supportive of my campaign, because I represent all of our kids here in LC. We have every demographic, creed, color. And in LC, all you have to do to be valuable is show or is walk through the door. Mm-hmm. And that's what government needs to get back to with Oregonians. We need each other. Rural supplies the cities.
Absolutely.
Cities provide the markets.
Absolutely.
We need each other.
Yep. So we only got about a minute here with you. What are some of your solutions to stop these lies from public officials? And should it be easier for the public to hold public officials accountable for their actions? And what would that look like?
You have to publicly ask clarifying questions and demand an answer. And that's not something you get in normal politics in America. So when she says, you know, use that analogy of, you know, all votes, every vote matters. Then we say, well, how much do rural votes matter? See, nobody ever asks those questions in a debate setting or not. I'm going to ask those questions. And I want her to tell the people of Oregon. And then when she says, no, they matter the same, I say, well, then how come you gerrymandered the redistricting and gave undue influence to Portland over rural areas of the
mm-hmm.
state?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
I would absolutely love to see that. That is Mark Thielman. Again, he's running for Oregon's governor as a Republican. Mark for Oregon, MarkForOregon.com. We'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com as well. Mark, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
This show is being uploaded to our network of radio stations Friday morning, so we don't yet know the results of the Arizona audit, but we will be talking about them next week, good, bad, or ugly. A reminder that Mondays, after this show airs on all of our radio stations, if you miss the show or want to hear it again or share it with others, the podcast version is available on iSpyRadio.com. There's a player right there on the individual show pages, or go to your favorite podcast platform and catch it there. And be sure to hit subscribe, because that helps us move up the rankings. In fact, if you have Amazon, you can now say, Alexa, play the iSpy Radio show on Amazon Music. How cool is that? That is all of our time for today. Demand that your elected officials earn your trust, because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.